Okay, the House Transportation meeting is called to order. It is February 25th, 2010, and about 8 minutes after 1. Let the record reflect that Representative Peterson, Representative T. Wilson, Representative Johnson, Representative Munoz, and myself, Representative P. Wilson, are present. And I'd like to recognize our staff again. Back against the wall is Nancy Hemingway, House Recording Secretary Luke over there is our LIO monitor, and up front here is my Chief of Staff, Becky Rooney. And before we start, just again a reminder about turning off your cell phones. And we have canceled House Bill 322, the winter snow tires, for today at the request of the sponsor. And the only thing on our agenda today, then, is a new version of House Bill 329, the Alaska Transportation Infrastructure Fund, or ATIF. And so we have before us version K, and would someone like to move version K?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would like to move, as a working document, the committee substitute for House Bill 329, Transportation, which is designated 26LS1307/K-Kane. Dated 2/25/10.
All right, and so we have that bill before us. As you all know, we've been working on this bill for quite a while. We've been listening to people that testify. We've been listening to the committee and the concerns that the committee have, and we're offering a new version that incorporates the recommended changes that we had talked about. So my plan for today is to go over the changes and answer any questions that we can, and I will then open the bill for public testimony one more time and then leave it open, I plan to, for next time that we meet on this bill again. And my goal is to have the bill that the entire committee can get behind, and so I don't want to rush it because this is a big deal. So Becky, if you would like to come forward and introduce yourself and go over the changes that we've made to the bill.
For the record, my name is Becky Rooney, staff to Representative Peggy Wilson. The changes to version N of HB 329 are mostly definitions. I will refer to the page numbers and the line numbers so that you can kind of follow along in the bill. Page 2, line 4 through 8 was the first change that we made. There was a concern that it would appear that the fisheries business tax was being singled out as a source of funds for the Municipal Harbor Facility Grant Fund. So this can get appropriations from lots of sources, including that fisheries business tax and the ATIF. So we have removed all reference to other sources of funds that grant fund can receive funds from. And that way it just leaves it wide open and no one will feel singled out by that. Okay, the second one is on page 3, line 8. There was a lot of discussion about making sure that the may in this sentence would be binding or not, so we changed it to shall not. And we did get a memo from the reviser that this was contrary to the manual of legislative drafting, but that they did it anyway. Just want to make sure you all know that. But it does say shall now. The next changes are page 3, lines 15 through 31, and page 4, lines 1 through 8. We attempted to come up with descriptions that bounded what the different modes included, but still keep it broad enough so that it was flexible for future legislatures to be able to appropriate as they saw fit. We didn't want to bind it so tight that if we forgot something, they'd have to change the statute to do it. So I wasn't going to go through those definitions. I think that if you want to go through and read them, one major thing to note, we put in major maintenance at in every mode because there was a lot of discussion that we were excluding major maintenance, and that was never the intent. We could do that through the capital budget. So that's why we put that in there. And if there's any questions on those definitions, we'll be happy to go through.
Representative T. Wilson?
I just have a question on the percentages. Did you look at the percentages currently that are being spent on the roads? I mean, is there any kind of, I mean, it goes by each capital project as it goes, but did you like look at a five-year average on how those funds currently are being spent?
Well, we looked at, there's a report by DOT, let's get moving, is that right, Frank? 2030 plan. And we had average or percentages that kind of tracked to that plan, which was a long-term strategic plan. But there was a lot of discussion in the beginning that was too constrictive, and they wanted to have it more flexible, so there was a range. So what we did was we put not more than this percentage, and they don't add up to 100%. It's more than 100% so that we could be more flexible in how we were presenting it.
Thank you.
Okay, and then the next change is on page 5, lines 2-7. We've been struggling with a way to define rural versus urban election districts. And right now we have it at each, two of the legislators shall represent an election district that does not include a borough or city with a population of 30,000 or more. And then two shall represent an election district that includes at least one borough or city with a population of 35,000 or more. So we're trying to ensure that the more densely populated representatives get two people on the advisory board, and the less densely populated election districts get two representatives on the board. Or not board, I think it's called a council.
I have a question.
Representative Mignot.
Do we have anything currently in place where legislators are inputting their opinions on a process that involves capital money like this? Is there any other similar structure?
I'm sorry, Representative Munoz, through the chair. I don't know.
I don't think so.
I can look into it.
Madam Chair, I think that there are legislators on the Mental Health Trust Board, and there are, I think there are examples. I don't know if that is this specific, but I think you could find some examples where legislators are on.
And I mean, this I think that this covered the reasoning behind it is because many of our constituents felt very strongly that when the DOT, and I apologize for people that are sitting in the audience, but that when DOT came to their communities, the perception was that they said their thing and then DOT went back and did their own thing. And so because of that, we thought, well, we will put people that on it that are elected by the people. And so that's why we added legislators to it, so that there would be more of our constituents would feel like there was a little more control, because there would be some people on it that they actually elected.
Okay, can I have another question?
Representative Munoz.
So once this plan is put together, does it come, it goes then to the governor and comes to the legislature for approval?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes, and in the capital budget. Just like the budget process.
Okay. All right.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, and Mr. Richards may know the answer to this, there was a court case in Anchorage about legislators being on the AMATS board, and the city won that case, and then Senate President Stephen appointed two legislators to that. That case was won by the city, so the legislators were not allowed to participate in that. Are we running afoul of that in any way with this? It seems to be clearly different, but I don't know if we're into an area where we may be And I don't know who would sue us over having a legislator involved, but it was the court ruled that they didn't have to appoint, or the state didn't have the right to appoint that to the AMATS board. So are we running any kind of risk here? Any, I don't know, it's probably not a bad answer in this case if you don't know. I just want to make sure that we're, I like the concept. I was one of the members that was booted off AMATS, so I like that concept of the legislators being involved. I think it helps, but I want to make sure that we get it right this time.
Madam Chairman, for the record, Frank Richards, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. It just so happens that we have in the audience today our Assistant AG, Jim Cantor, who can likely address that specific issue because he's intimately involved with our legal actions. So, Jim,
hey, Jim,
if you could come up.
Yeah.
I'd rather be lucky than good any day.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Johnson, it is a situation where there is risk. I don't actually recall the details of the AMATS litigation, but we have over the years from the AG's office issued a number of published opinions on legislators serving on various boards, and where the line falls is somewhat unclear. We have said that a purely advisory board is something where the legislative and the executive branch can serve together. But then we've looked at specific boards that seem advisory, one called a land use advisory board, an amateur sports authority. And under those facts, we've said, well, in these instances, the legislators would carry more weight than purely advisory. And so in these instances, we think it would be unconstitutional. So where that line is, I don't know, between a legislator doing substantive executive branch work and a legislator doing a purely advisory work. But I think you phrased it in terms of risk, and it does create risk.
Mm-hmm. And I, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah. who would come forward and say that this is a bad thing and actually challenge that in this situation? Is there going to be an adversarial group? I mean, in the case of AMATS, there was clearly a problem between the mayor and the then president of the Senate that caused the initial reaction. I don't care what, if it had been, you know, the sky's blue, there would have been a lawsuit. Is there anyone that would come out of the woodworks and say this is not a good sign? I mean, are we into a controversial situation here where someone's going to say, no, that's wrong? Are we waiting for someone to not get a project, then sue and slow the whole project down? Or is that kind of where we would be in this on a legal stance?
I'm not aware of any present controversy, so it's the kind of thing you mentioned through the chair somebody disappointed with the ranking in the future challenging it, or perhaps even a dispute between the governor and the legislature in the future and a challenge through that routing.
Well, I flagged it just because I want to do a little more thorough checking before we
yeah, Madam Chair, if I could, and I support
follow up, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support having the legislature on these things. I think it's a conduit, it's a communications line, and I guess what we're really talking about is a separation of powers issue, that this is an administrative function where legislators are involved in more than advisory. So that's what it basically boils down to. Is that
through the chair correct?
Is there a difference between, say, an ex officio member versus a voting member, so that we could be there for input, to be that communications conduit, to understand what's going on, to explain to the group what the legislator's thought process is, and make them non-voting or ex officio? Does that make a difference in this, or is it still kind of a hands-off, distant? And I'm looking for solutions here before maybe I'm looking for a problem to a solution. But
yeah, through the chair, I know that one of the opinions we issued was a group that had ex officio elected officials to look at capital development in Juneau, and our opinion said that was fine. And then on the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority, we have non-voting legislative members, and Our office never issued an opinion on that, but nobody's challenged it. It's functioning.
And you know, I think that there would be more of a problem when it's a specific project by itself or a specific town like Anchorage, you know. I don't know that, but I'm just guessing that there might be more controversy in that instance rather than trying to get it statewide perspective and having several people on a board. But we will definitely do a little more. Do you have follow-up?
Yeah. Is
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess I wanted to look at this kind of in your opinion of this. If you were asked to issue a legal opinion on this, I mean, and I know we're on the record and everything, but saying right now that you will not be held to what the answer is, we're being very clear. What would your legal opinion be on this if we were to say what is what's our grounds for having these members on, even though it's diversified, well spread out, there's no one's going to have a monopoly? I mean, does that figure into your legal opinion, or is it strictly it's a legislative versus administrative function, therefore separation of powers come into play? And by the way, our Constitution doesn't guarantee separation of powers. So I throw that in this. The national Constitution does, but the state doesn't. So.
Through the chair, I'm not sure I'm prepared today to answer that question directly, but I can tell you some of the factors, and that's
okay.
What we have done is looked at whether the legislator would be carrying, legislators act through passing laws, and when they start to carry their weight in the executive functions, that's when the constitutional concern arises. And so you'd look at the composition of this board and the duties of this board, the kinds of things it's doing, and see whether the legislators would be carrying more than the weight of just what they do here at the Capitol.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Munoz, do you have a question?
Well, no, I just really appreciate hearing from you, because this is an area that troubles me in this bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Jim. Becky?
Madam Chair. Actually, that was the last change that we made, was that definition. So with that, we can entertain questions.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? And we do have some.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Before we get too far, I would like to ask for a formal legal opinion based upon the what we've just heard. And also, if we qualified these as ex officio members, non-voting members, what effect that would have on that legal opinion, strictly as an information conduit as opposed to a voting member. And that might be a solution to get the input that we're looking for and the two-way communication we're looking for without running afoul of. But I'd like to go ahead and get that if we could, okay. Unless you're anxious to move this.
No,
and then I'm
don't.
Fine with going. Weird. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not planning to move it today.
Okay. So. If we could get that as quickly as possible. If
Madam Chair, one thing, if I may.
It's Becky Rooney talking.
Sorry. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, when we first started drafting, working with the drafters, they raised that issue. But when we put that the report was going to the governor and getting that whole input, they had told us that they felt that there was not a problem with separation of powers. But we definitely need to get a formal opinion.
And Madam Chair, if I might, those are our attorneys, right?
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
Those are.
Okay, any other questions? All right, we will open up testimony again. And we have Tom George from Fairbanks, Aircraft Owner and Pilots Association. Tom, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Can you lean a little bit closer in so we can hear you a little bit better?
Is that any better?
That sure is. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, my name's Tom George. I'm the Alaska representative of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. And I did speak to the bill before, so just kind of going from there, we again very much support the concept of a state-funded aviation or a transportation program. The devil certainly are in the details, which you've been grappling with here today even. We do continue to have concerns on, you know, how the fund is allocated across modes. We think that's something that we need to look at more. We are actively trying to look at other funds that might be like it to see how other people are dealing with this situation. And as follow-on to the conversation you just had, we also have concerns about the makeup of the council and, frankly, are of the opinion that we probably shouldn't have legislators on this at all. In fact, for those that are familiar with the APEP process, the whole purpose is to have a group that actually vote on and rank projects to come up with a score. So if you're ex officio, you wouldn't be able to participate in that process. And actually, you know, whether it should be loaded up with state employees is another question that we would like to probe at a little bit more. While we have been looking at other programs and things like how the Denali Commission has prioritized their transportation projects, ultimately, you know, we are unique here in terms of our blend of transportation, the importance of it to us. We're going to have to develop a unique Alaska solution. And it would be our desire to see you hold this bill and immediately after the session hold a series of stakeholder meetings so we could actually get all the stakeholders in the room at the same time to try and work through some of these issues, realizing that it's going to take, at least with the current strategy, a constitutional amendment. And it seems very important that out of that process would come a plan which would be used by all groups to get support to get the constitutional amendment passed. And so that's our current thinking on the matter, and we thank you very much for your work on this.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Tom? Doesn't look like it, Tom. Thank you very much. And Whitney Brewster with the Division of Motor Vehicles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Whitney Brewster, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. Conceptually, the Division of Motor Vehicles does not oppose this legislation in any way, but we just wanted to make the committee aware that currently almost all of DMV's appropriations, including capital, are funded via receipt supported services. That means we live off of our receipts, with the extra being deposited into the general fund. If all of the revenues, all of the vehicle registration revenues listed in HB 329 are transferred into the Transportation Infrastructure Fund, there would be insufficient fees left to fund the entire DMV operating appropriation and none of our capital appropriation. So our approach is that we just don't want to compromise the DMV's ability to collect the revenue that the committee is contemplating for this transportation infrastructure fund, as well as jeopardize our ability to carry out the DMV's statutory obligations. What we would like to see is that the cost of funding the DMV is first covered out of the revenue that we generate, with the remainder of those funds going into the transportation fund. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
And I do want to make a comment that I talked with Kevin Banks this morning, and I asked him to get us a printout of what their expenses were for the last several years, and so that we could look at them and see what they were, so that we can and I'm very willing to put an amendment in to make sure they're taken care of. So it was just too soon to do it for this meeting, but I am doing that. So Representative
Thank you, Madam
Johnson.
Whitney, hi, Representative Johnson here. Can you tell me how your capital budget is assigned? Do you guys go through the normal capital budget process and have receipt assignments or receipt authorizations for capital? Do you go through the same process or that everyone else goes through on that?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, yes, sir, we do go through the typical capital budget process.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Follow-up, Representative
Johnson. You're looking primarily, and when you talk capital, you're talking mainly software and hardware and computers, but not really buildings and what we would typically look at as capital projects, or are we?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, you are correct. This is primarily hardware, software, things of those of that nature.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
And when I was talking with Kevin Banks this morning, he did comment that they had requests in for capital funds of $13 million this time for IT. Yeah, if they want to upgrade and make sure that it's throughout the system. So we're taking that into account.
Madam Chair, if I might, I sit on the subcommittee, and I wanted to get that on the record that that's what we were talking about more than anything else. And I knew the answer before I asked the question, but I wanted it on the record and give them an opportunity to state their case.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Whitney. I don't see any other questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? Okay, I'm not going to close testimony yet, because I think there will be other times that we will have testimony, but I'm just going to kind of end it for today and then ask if there's any comments or from the committee itself on any of this, or other recommendations, or anything that you would like to comment on. Well, Representative Peterson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So, looking here on Section 3, where we're talking about the vehicle registration fee, since we were just talking to the people from DMV, so we are going to be taking those registration fees and putting them into this fund, and then having to fund the DMV through operating budget type of thing every year, or we're not going to do that? Or
they've requested that they still collect the fees and then submit so much to us. And so we're having an amendment drawn up to provide for that. And I didn't want to really do it until we had that information about what the funds expended and collected were up until this point.
Okay. All right, thanks.
We'll have that at the next meeting when we discuss the bill again.
Okay.
Does the department have any comments? No, no comments. Okay, well, then what I'd like to do is just let you know that next week we are not holding any meetings next week, because there's many people that are going to be gone and we're having trouble with the quorum, and so next week there won't be any meetings at all. But then the following week we will have our next meeting on Tuesday, March 9th, and if there's no further business, we'll adjourn.